because of rising sea levels, a lot of beaches have to have their sand replenished, so why not with olivine?
Can I clarify something you just said? When you say green beaches, do you mean the color or just the theory?
I like that. Both. Both, the color included.
They'll be green?
They will be green.
I am so much more on board. And I was really on board to begin with.
Yep.
But like, green looks good on me, and this just gives me more reason to be at the beach.
Welcome to Rebalancing Act. We are Kieran and Leslie Ann, two law grads, and actually soon to be licensed lawyers, but also even more importantly, two friends. We know that climate change is happening and that we have to solve it, so every second Friday, we come together and talk about how we can get there. How are you doing today, Leslie Ann?
I'm doing all right. It's kind of wildly terrifying to hear you point out that we're almost licensed lawyers. So just like having a mental moment to adjust to that. But otherwise, it's been a good day. I made a large batch of cold brew coffee that has been getting me through the day.
That's excellent. We have like a spherical ice cube maker, you know, hypothetically for making whiskey cocktails or something. But in this case, we've been using it for iced coffee and it is exceptional.
Ooh, I love that.
It has good energy.
I also lately have really embraced the sourdough starter my mom gave me and have become slightly obsessed with perfecting a sourdough cinnamon roll recipe. I think I've made 3 batches in the last 2 weeks.
Well, if you need someone to taste test, I am always here.
Oh, you're gonna get some soon. Because I don't know if my roommate, like, can handle much more.
I can handle. I can do it. I can take the ring to Mordor.
Oh, I love it. I love a good Lord of the Rings reference.
Thank you so much. Well, today we wanted to talk about one of the things that we'll probably need to get to net zero. And we've been talking a lot about net zero lately. And I don't think we've talked about net zero that much on the podcast. But it kind of seems like everyone else is talking about net zero, you know, governments, banks, NGOs, companies, other actors too. But what does it actually mean?
I think part of the reason I maybe don't talk about it too much on the podcast, at least, is, you know, with net zero, the idea is that the net output is zero. So we have some things removing carbon from the atmosphere, but we still have other things that are emitting carbon to the atmosphere. And to me, I don't really care if you're aiming for net zero or if you're aiming for net negative carbon emissions or you're just aiming to reduce carbon emissions for right now. Because right now we just need to do something. And so when I think about climate solutions for the podcast, I don't really care how they're framing it in that sense. We just got to start acting.
Absolutely. We do like to focus on the how.
Yeah, because I think it's so easy to kind of think about these things in theory of, you know, do we need to be net negative? Do we need to be net zero? Do we just need to slow down our emissions when we all know what we're doing right now isn't working? So let's start changing and then figure it out.
I mean, especially because I think that's, you know, a big gap in the knowledge right now. Like, what does net zero mean? What does it do? Does it mean zero emissions ever? Because we figured out how to decarbonize a lot of things, a lot more things than we're doing now, so we have work to do, but not all of them. Because it turns out pretty much everything that we do has a carbon footprint. So right now, my read of the consensus is that when we first, at least, reach net zero, we're going to need to be drawing down carbon from the atmosphere in order to counterbalance carbon that continues to be emitted, you know. One of many examples people talk about, like, I'm not an expert in this, but apparently steel construction and steel production is a pretty hard area to decarbonize. So we're going to continue to need steel. And in order to counterbalance that effect, we're also going to need some net negative carbon technologies.
Do you want to know why it matters? Why steel is so important to carbon and those numbers?
I would love to, because I actually don't.
you need to, you, the carbon content of your steel determines how hard your steel is. And so you actually want to be producing carbon with more or, sorry, you want to be producing steel with more or less carbon, depending on what you're looking for. Yeah, so the higher the content in your steel, it'll be more harder and stronger, but it'll become more brittle. And so usually you want a high carbon content if you want a steel that can, will stay strong or will maintain an edge. Whereas you might want something with less carbon if you want something that's less likely to be brittle and will have more bend to it. For a fish knife, for when you're going to be filleting a fish, you want it to have lower carbon, so the blade will bend. Whereas for a general kitchen knife or utility knife, you generally want something with a higher carbon content because it'll hold an edge better.
Good to know. Also sounds, yeah, that sounds like that would be hard to decarbonize.
I'm really enjoying my niche knowledge coming in handy.
Wow, I've learned so much. This is excellent. To actually go from talking about one technology that I don't fully understand, but I find exciting, to another technology. So we have, you know, we have some carbon negative technologies that are pretty familiar. Enter the tree, and also other photosynthesis producing plants and stuff like that. But I think if we have learned anything truly in the pursuit of climate solutions is that we need a whole bunch of them. The concept of a silver bullet for climate change does not exist, and the pursuit of a silver bullet just really like hinders real progress, I think. You know, you have to have a tool belt. You need a suite of solutions. We're not going to direct air capture all of the excess carbon from the atmosphere, but we're also not going to plant enough trees to fix that either. It's just a reality of the game, but both of those are important. So, I mean, those are two of the more, you know, well-known carbon negative technologies, and there are actually some others out there that I know we've talked about those two on the podcast before, but I wanted to talk about a third one today. And it's called advanced weathering. So I think just explain what advanced weathering is. You kind of have to start with the concept of what weathering is. So I was doing some Googling, thought the National Geographic said it well. Weathering is the breaking down or dissolving of rocks and minerals on the Earth's surface. So several factors can be responsible for this, or, you know, probably at the same time. The sun, air, salts, or movement, among others. So the idea of advanced weathering, you know, alternative names, turbocharged weathering, fast weathering.
Ooh, turbocharged. Ooh, I like.
Is, yeah, turbocharged. I've been watching a lot of Formula One lately, so that's probably where that came from. So in the Earth's natural long-term carbonate silicate cycle, when rain falls on exposed volcanic rock, this causes it to weather or degrade faster. And what this does is it actually removes carbon dioxide from the atmosphere as bicarbonate dissolved in water. This water flows to the oceans, makes some stops along the way in the shells of sea creatures, and ultimately becomes limestone. So the vast majority of the carbon on our planet, ton for ton, is actually locked up in this rock, more than in the atmosphere or even other talked about carbon sources like permafrost or soil. So we're actually going to discuss the specifics of this more next week with one of the co-founders of a nonprofit that's aiming to actually turn many, many, many millions of tons of carbon into rock. And they're going to do that by extracting and mining the volcanic mineral olivine, which is extremely abundant and very green, grinding it into sand for greater surface area, and transporting it to coastlines where the wave energy will interact with the olivine mineral and cause its particles to collide, which grind each other up and accelerate the weathering process, which, if believe it or not, actually removes a lot of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere.
That's really incredible. And I really liked the shout out to the sea friends and their shells after spending a week with a snail friend on my balcony.
It's an important part of the ecosystem.
It really is. I don't think they get enough credit, so I appreciate that we are giving them the credit.
Absolutely. I also just think it's you know, a kind of a cool and badass solution. People are really into pink lakes. They're into blue lakes. Why not green beaches? why not have green beaches be the next big thing? Especially because, I don't know if our listeners will know this, but a lot of beaches actually have to undergo what's called replenishment or renourishment, but that's a fancy word for erosion. Just because of rising sea levels, a lot of beaches have to have their sand replenished, so why not with olivine?
Can I clarify something you just said? When you say green beaches, do you mean the color or just the theory?
I like that. Both, the color included.
They'll be green?
They will be green.
I am so much more on board. And I was really on board to begin with.
Yep.
But, like, green looks good on me, and this just gives me more reason to be at the beach.
This is what I mean, like, not to play to ego, but this would just be Instagrammable.
It'd be so Instagrammable. The influencers would be there by the dozens.
Yeah, so many facets of greenness.
We need to go. We need to go to a green beach.
For sure. I mean, they don't quite exist yet, but when they do, and hopefully they are prolific, we will be there.
Let us know. We will be your first influencer. I don't know if I've ever been so on board to go to a beach, and I like beaches.
Yeah, that's where all the critters are.
They really are. Ugh, I'm where the critters are. There's that book, Where the Wild Things Are. You know, if you want to know where I am, it's where the critters are.
I love that. You need, you'd like a find my friend, but also just like find my coastline, and Leslie will be there chilling.
Oh my god, yeah.
I'm so glad you're pumped about this technology. It's really cool.
I would like to clarify, I was pumped about it before I knew that it would be literally green. Mm-hmm. But that just like was an added layer of excitement for me.
All of our listeners, if you're curious, you gotta Google Project Vesta and also Google Olivine. It's a, you know, you'll be pleasantly surprised. Unless green doesn't look good on you, in which case you may be upset.
Oh my god. I'm Googling now. Oh my god. It's so pretty.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff.
Oh my god. How can I just... Wow. And it looks so good with the blue ocean. God, nature is great at color coordinating.
So, I mean, as exciting as green beaches are, which is to say, extremely exciting. And as exciting as this technology is, I also think it's worth talking about the larger context and, you know, picking apart one of the really prevalent dynamics that I personally see in the discourse of climate solutions, which is I tend to see, and I think this is becoming somewhat resolved over time, especially just as we failed to act, but there's a false dichotomy between solutions that will get us to net zero, so mitigating our carbon emissions, you know, finding, using the green energy, building the right buildings, etc., and carbon negative solutions themselves. And I think that historically, at least, and, you know, even continuing into today, there's this idea that if we build these carbon negative solutions, that we're going to get too comfortable and then not do all of the necessary mitigation that we have to do. And I have to say that, you know, I understand how in abstract that seems like a good, that seems, you know, like a good position, a strong position to take. But I think, first of all, a lack of carbon negative solutions has not incentivized us to stop emitting. It hasn't. It just, you know, we haven't had them and we're still emitting. And the second is that I just think that, you know, as it is so often in life, why not both?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of why not both, especially because so many of the solutions have other types of benefits, whether they reduce air pollution, create Instagrammable beaches, all of these different things. And I think, you know, we're going to want to be implementing some of these solutions for their own reasons, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, there just is a lot of scrutiny on startups operating in this space. And we actually need more startups operating in this space. There aren't enough people trying out these solutions because not every company is successful. And, you know, sometimes you actually want competition in a field. Why is it that Silicon Valley, how did Juicero become a thing? But then all of these startups are really facing, you know, much more heavy scrutiny and all of this ideological, I think, opposition to them. I just think it's worth really interrogating this idea that even before an idea has proved its own success or not, like, we need to decide whether it's the right kind of good thing.
You're totally right. I, like, I've been listening recently to a podcast that I will link to in the show notes on Theranos. Have you heard about them?
I certainly have, and I read the book.
Yeah, it's, for folks who aren't aware, it was a medical tech company that never actually developed the technology they promised, and they lasted for years and had all kinds of money coming in, all kinds of investments. These people liked the idea they were selling and liked the people, even though there was no actual product that was developed that was successful. And I think about, how can something like that happen and run for years when we have so many people who are really passionate about great climate solutions and those don't have the same pickup? And I think a lot of it is what's trendy and who is personable. And I would really love to see more support from a regulatory perspective, from a financial perspective, for carbon solutions based startups, because, you know, they may not always be the sexiest idea. They may not be as easy to sell as, you know, life-saving medical technology that feels so urgent, but they are urgent in a very similar way.
100%. I really feel like the news and maybe Bill Gates' own actions have not been so kind to him in the last week or so. But I do endorse his idea of the moonshot, that we need to be investing in these relatively high risk, really high potential reward technologies. And I think that, you know, there aren't enough Silicon Valley and really funded startups. And I think we're starting to see some momentum in this area, but we really need so much more momentum that invest into these ideas that, yeah, it might not work, but wouldn't it be so great if it did? And I think investing in these technologies shouldn't distract us from our goal of, you know, EV proliferation, etc. But these two things can exist at the same time.
I think you're right. I think we kind of have this perception of our ability to invest in climate startups as finite. Because as individual investors, that probably is true. You know, we only have so much money to invest. But when we look at the ability of governments, of venture capital, of financial institutions to invest, to provide credit, it seems endless for so many more traditional corporations, that I would really love to see some way for governments to be taking on some of that risk, to be incentivizing the investment in these kinds of projects.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we are starting to see that in both the Canadian and American budgets, but there is so much room for more. So I really think it's worth also just bringing this conversation into the discourse.
Yeah. And I think it's something that as corporations and folks in the financial industry are starting to have to reckon with these issues, as their comfort levels in navigating these issues increase, I think we will start to see more of it. Inevitably, but in my opinion, that can't come soon enough.
100%. I wanted to touch upon, you know, before the end of our podcast conversation, something that really drove this idea home for me. Because, you know, when you get into the area, you're curious about solutions and you don't exactly know what to believe. And one authoritative moral figure is saying one thing and another authoritative moral figure is saying something else. But something that I think helped clarify it for me personally was an article that I read in The Atlantic. And I'll link it in the show notes so you too can read it if you'd like. And it's a conversation with a philosopher and Georgetown professor of political science named Olufemi Taiwo. And he talks about, you know, the reticence that many Western and frankly, usually white climate activists have to carbon removal in the abstract, when the technology could materially improve and repair the lives of people who are hardest hit by climate change. He was focusing on the continent of Africa in particular, but I think this idea goes even more broad than that. And, you know, these people, as we know, the twin evils of climate change is that these populations of people are also the ones that have done the least to cause it. So in this sense, he says the reality of carbon removal is actually a form of redistributive justice. that this is beyond a science problem, and this even gets into the realm of politics and morality. I think his quote really sums it up when he says, "The biggest thing people need to keep track of in these conversations is that what matters is outcomes, not sides."
Yeah, I really like that. I think it's really true that it, you know, we can fight about who is leading this, what direction we want to go in terms of, you know, carbon negative, carbon neutral, all of these different things. But what matters is just that we do it.
Mm-hmm. Especially, it's just not a hypothetical conversation. It, like, is so material to people's lives.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Leslie Ann, for joining today.
Always happy to be here, Karen.
And thanks to our beloved listeners for tuning in again. If you need more Rebalancing Act in your life, you can find us on Instagram at Rebalancing Act, Twitter at Rebalancing Act _, and on our website at rebalancingact.ca. Talk to you in 2 weeks.